Hello and welcome. It's You Irons, the West Ham United podcast from the good people at The Athletic with me, Sam Delaney. Right now, you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special discounted price throughout January. Enjoy great analysis, in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts for less than just £4 a month. Just go to theathletic.com/West Ham pod to sign up and enjoy The Athletic throughout 2021. That's theathletic.com/West Ham pod. Like I say, I'm Sam Delaney. I'm joined as always by The Athletic's West Ham correspondent, Rashane Thomas. Rashane, Happy New Year, mate.
Happy New Year, Sam. What are some of your New Year's resolutions?
I've just got to floss more, mate. To be honest, it's got beyond a joke now. I go to the hygienist once every few months and they're like, mate, for God's sake, have you been using the interdental brushes? And I go, yeah, and I just lie to them. Why? I'm an adult. I don't need to lie, but I do because I can't be bothered with the lectures. But now they're like, look, mate, you're going to lose teeth at this rate. You've got to get in there. So I've been getting right in there, Rashane, with the little interdental brushes. Are you familiar with those?
I am.
Have you seen them in the shops or are they something that you've used?
No, I've seen it in the shops, but I'm more old school. I'm more of a toothpick.
Old school floss.
Yeah.
Oh, toothpick. Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah. That's quite gentlemanly, I think. Anyway, so that's me. What about you?
Yeah, I'm trying to look like Anthony Joshua by summertime, but, you know, time is running out. When gym's closed, time is running out for you.
Well, maybe you should just get on the steroids, mate, because then you can just sit around in lockdown. I don't know. Right, okay. Did you enjoy the football over Christmas and New Year, mate?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, just in terms of West Ham, what really pleased me was the fact that Moyes made a number of changes, yet the team were able to, you know, overcome that tough period and pick up points. And we've seen that throughout the whole season, the team picking up points. That really impressed me during the festive period.
5 points from three games that came so close together, it was ridiculous. I mean, I loved it. People moan, don't they, about fixture pile-ups and unfair fixtures. And I see their point of view, but as a fan, you know, it got me through Christmas, really, is that you just keep, you know, you wake up every second day and there's a West Ham game to look forward to. So we got 5 points. Now, starting out, looking at those games, especially how squished together they were, my prediction was probably 4 points, realistically, from those three fixtures. And those 4 points would probably come from three against Brighton, one against Southampton, and probably none away at Everton, right? I thought that's realistic. As it transpired, we came away with 5. And we won't go deep into it. Everyone knows, you know, it was a very controversial team selection made by David Moyes, particularly playing Mark Noble in the number 10 role. We won't go deep into that. We know the flaws in that. But, boy, did people go crazy about it on social media. I mean, there was literally people, a reasonably significant number of West Ham fans going, that's it, Moyes has got to go, right? After that game against Brighton. And I wonder where those people are now, because you sort of think, yeah, with the fixtures we had coming up and how mad it was that we had these three fixtures in the space of a week, you know, it was obvious that he had to tinker with the squad, rotate the players a little bit. And I think, you know, this is a lesson now for the many, many knee-jerk fans out there that you have to sometimes reserve judgment. You have to reserve judgment and see what we come out of the whole period with. And what we came out of that whole period with, that difficult period with, is 5 points rather than the 4 that most realistic fans would have predicted. Did you notice what an extreme reaction there was to that Brighton game?
I noticed that. You know what? I call it fake outrage. That's what I call it now. Fake outrage. It's like, yeah. I'll admit, but the first half was terrible. I thought West Ham were absolutely garbage in that first half against Brighton, but they reacted. And what really impressed me in that match was Ben Johnson taking a chance. He scored his first goal for West Ham in that game, and I was so happy for him.
It was a lovely finish, that goal as well.
So I was so happy for him, celebrating, and you could see how much it meant to him. And obviously, he had to wait for his chance as well. Hasn't been playing week in, week out because of, you know, Safar playing at right back, Cresswell doing good, Masuaku, so he had to be patient. So he really deserved that goal, and obviously Souček scoring as well, which is always good. So yeah, I was really happy and impressed with the second half performance in that game.
Yeah, Southampton, I thought we could have won. Benrahma came on, had a great chance, although I didn't feel that he blew that chance. I thought that the goalie did well to save it. So I was happy with the performance against Southampton. And then that allowed us, against Everton, to pick more or less our strongest side. And that was the point at which you realised it wasn't that David Moyes had lost his mind and had thought that, you know, our strongest team did involve Johnson at left back or Noble at number 10. He didn't think that. He was just rotating and he saved the best till last. And he put out what I felt was the strongest lineup possible against Everton. And it paid off. I thought we, you know, it was a close game, but I thought on balance we just about deserved those 3 points.
You're right, Sam. And you know what? In the matches against Southampton and Everton, kept Danny Ings quiet, kept Richarlison quiet,
yes,
kept Dominic Calvert-Lewin quiet. People are saying he was in Lokbonner's back pocket, and I agree. You know what? I want to give a special mention right now. Special, special mention to Craig Dawson.
Because yes. Yeah, you owe him an apology, mate. I've got to say, I'm glad you're giving him a special mention because a lot of people have been cynical about Craig Dawson since he joined the club. No one wanted him to. Then we hadn't seen him. And, you know, you're an influential voice in the media, especially amongst the West Ham journalistic fraternity. And you have absolutely battered the bloke since he came to the club, mate.
Listen, Craig, if you're listening to this podcast on your way to our screen, I apologise. You know, new year, new me. I'm a new and improved man right now. But listen, I was at the Petey Bar versus West Ham 1-23 match. And obviously Craig Dawson and Yarmolenko Malenko in the start 11 for that game. And listen, Craig will know, he was poor in that match. Absolutely, it was terrible. Probably the worst player on the pitch. So
I can't believe you're going back over old ground. You're doing it again.
But I say that to make his point of that. I saw that and I thought, yeah, there's no way he's going to challenge for a first team berth. Absolutely no chance. So when I saw his name in the starting 11 for the Southampton game ahead of Issa Diop, I was thinking, okay, strange one. Hopefully he does well. Kept a clean sheet. And against Everton, played well. And the fact that he went down because during the first half, he landed awkwardly on his right foot and looked like he was going to come off. So he bounced back from that. And I was like, you know what? Credit to you, Craig Dawson, because you proved me wrong. And listen, I'm on a diet right now, Sam, and I've been eating a lot of humble pie this season. And you know what? Feed me more humble pie, because I'll own up to it.
He did go down, and no one quite knew why. And I read subsequently, I don't know if you heard this, that in fact he got a bit dizzy. And it wasn't the way he'd landed as such, but for some reason he got all dizzy, and that's why he couldn't get up. And they gave him a pill. All I read was the physio gave him a pill and then he felt better. And I don't know whether you can do some digging into that, but I'm not, I know it sounds like I'm joking, but that's literally what I read. I can't remember where I read it, that he had a dizzy spell. It came from nowhere. They gave him a pill. I don't know what sort of pill. I want to know what these anti-dizziness pills are that work so quickly, because I sometimes have dizzy spells myself, mate. But he effectively has played himself from fifth choice centre back into basically first choice. I mean, you know, first choice alongside Ogbonna. Because Balbuena, I don't think, was injured. He was just being rested. And Balbuena's had a very decent season. So he thought he'd give him a rest. The controversy was him choosing Dawson over Diop. Dawson, I think now, it's going to be hard for Balbuena to remove him from the side. Because that's two clean sheets in a row with Dawson in the side. I think it's. I can't see him being dropped for the next Premier League fixture, can you?
Yeah, I agree. I can't see Dawson being dropped for the next Premier League game against Burnley. He's just really impressed over the last two games. Just hasn't put a foot wrong. And I saw after West Ham, we uploaded a clip on their YouTube account behind the scenes. And after the match, Moyes is hugging everyone. So Fowl, Dawson. You can see such a good togetherness in the team right now. You got Craig Dawson just waiting for his chance. And when he comes in, doing well. And it's great to have, I always mention this like in previous podcasts, it's just great to have so many options. You don't want to be playing the same team week in, week out. If a player's playing terrible, you have to stick with him because you haven't got options. Look at Issa Diop. Only a year ago, he was called a monster by Jose Mourinho. Can't even get into the starting 11 right now. So it's good to have these options. And listen, Moyes won't be losing his sleep over these conundrums. This is going to be great.
It's great. Really good. Mate, where does this leave Issa Diop, though, in your opinion, in terms of his future at the club? Especially as he's one of our most expensive ever signings. I think he's probably our most expensive ever defender. And he's well liked by other clubs. He's been linked with big clubs on several occasions in the past. We know Mourinho likes him. That rumour has now resurfaced again. I mean, he must be looking at his future. He's a young defender who had a huge amount of promise ahead of him, and I'm sure still will have a good career. But he can't be sitting fifth choice centre back at West Ham, can he?
He can't. And you know what? I think Issa Diop has himself to blame for that, to be honest, Sam. He has himself to blame for that. My biggest frustration with Issa Diop, especially last season, he's just too inconsistent. He'll have a good match, and then the following three games will be very poor. And then he'll have another good match, and then the next five games will be poor. He just hasn't been consistent, and I feel like that's one of the reasons why he's been dropped. You've got Barbarina, hasn't had a bad game, in my opinion, this season. Craig Dawson playing well since he's been in the first team. Issa Diop will get a chance, and then he just can't build on from that. And also, perhaps another thing which hasn't been highlighted, he did suffer... He did catch coronavirus.
Yeah, perhaps, he did, yeah. And you know, different people have different... Yeah. We've had a few players who've had that, I guess. But
yeah.
Different people react in different ways, don't they? Some people just respond, like, after a week or two, they're better. And some people, it lasts for months.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Part of me thinks, you know, listen, I'm not saying I want to see the back of him because I've always liked him as a player, although I do agree with you that he doesn't have that consistency that David Moyes insists upon. And that actually, you know, people talk about what David, all different things that David Moyes has done to the club since he's been there. But really, it's quite simple. I think that standards are set by the guy at the top, and that traditionally managers have sort of almost been a bit too willing to accept, well, we're West Ham. Not all our players are going to be perfect, and we can't afford a team full of superstars who perform a 10 out of 10 in every game. And so there's almost, I feel, looking back, an acceptance of inconsistency to some degree at West Ham. Whereas there is clearly a regime in charge now in David Moyes and that coaching team that we always talk about behind him, where it's like there is no excuse in any game for you having an off day. We expect 100% performance in every match. Can't always be a 10 out of 10. You might not be a player capable technically of performing a 10 out of 10, but you have to be 100% focused in every single game. That is the difference, the biggest fundamental difference I can see between West Ham now and West Ham a year ago, is that we send a team out, and even on an off day, the players are on it. They are working for each other, and they are concentrating constantly.
You know what, I'll say very quickly, I'm so happy you said that, because from Moyes' one-year anniversary piece that myself and Adam Crafton wrote, we spoke to a dressing room source, and they said, listen, the standard Moyes sets in training, you have to be on it every day.
Yeah.
Whether you're starting 11 on the bench, on the fringes, you have to be on it every single day. And if you're not on it, you're not getting in this team. So that's where the standards come from. It comes from Moyes, as you mentioned, on the top. So
there's a lot of different things he's done, but I think that is the big difference you can see in a year, is that the standards are just higher. And even when, you know, some games we don't play well. We didn't play well against Brighton. You know, we could have easily lost that game. But you know what? The reason we drew it is because even though the players weren't having a great day and that the lineup was wrong, we kept fighting to the end, and we didn't give up when we went a goal down, which even under people, you know, will talk about Sam Allardyce gave us grit we hadn't had before. Not entirely true. You know, we capitulated in some games under Allardyce. Allardyce set our team up in certain games against big clubs, especially away from home, almost with the acceptance that we would probably lose, but the points would be worth sacrificing in order to save ourselves for the next games. You would never get that with a David Moyes side. David Moyes' team are expected to go out and fight for 3 points in every game, whether they're successful or not. I don't want Diop to leave necessarily, but I would rather not sell a first-team player like Declan Rice or Thomas Souček. And if there was a bid from a Tottenham or someone for around 20 to 30 million, might be unrealistic considering his place in the squad at the moment, or even something to be done with player exchanges. Is that something you think would be worth considering at this time? We don't have money, it's clear that we need backup in several areas of the squad, not least left back, central midfield and up front. Our options are pretty small. I think it would make the biggest difference to the club. It could be the difference between us just finishing mid-table or finishing somewhere much higher. We'll get on to our thoughts on that later. Just to get in a couple of players in that position, like a very good quality left wing back and a proper goal scorer. Maybe Diop. We clearly have an excess, suddenly we've got this excess of very good centre-backs at the club. Maybe getting rid of Diop and using it as a way of getting in a couple of quality players could be a good option for us, Rochane.
That's a great point, but you only do it if it's the right price. You don't sell him out of pure desperation. If it's a good offer and you can feel like, yeah, I can bring in a central midfielder or I can bring in a striker, then you do it. Because my thing is Diop, he's still young, 23, no in his prime, so he will improve with time. You don't want to do it, you don't want to sell him and then 2 years later you come to regret it.
Well, yeah, but 2 years later, but we're looking at this season, right? Now, if you look at where we are in the league in 10th, I look back at the results we've had this season and I can't, other than the game against Newcastle and those first sort of 20 minutes against Tottenham away, I can't really think of a time where we have played very badly. In fact, I think people maybe even misremember the Newcastle game because that was quite a close game for most of the match and they got two late-ish goals, if I remember rightly. This team could be a lot higher. If we'd not lost Antonio, we had more of a clinical goal scorer instead of Haller up front. I look at games. I look at the defeat to Liverpool. I thought we were the better team. The defeat to Chelsea, ridiculous that they ended up winning that 3-0. If we'd had a clinical striker, we would have been home and dry in the first half, you know? Arsenal, I thought we dominated them for the vast majority of that game. I can't believe they got a result against us. I mean, at the time, they thought, oh, well, it's Arsenal, because at the time, we still thought Arsenal were a decent team, right? There's various games where it's so frustrating. Now, you think, if we went into the second half of the season with either a fully fit Antonio or at least someone else who could come in and do that kind of a role up front. Because let's be honest, Haller, it's like playing with 10 men most weeks. Someone to cover for Masuaku on the left. I think we could really go for something here. If I was David Moyes, I'd be saying, look, I've proved myself to you. I've proved where I can get this club on very, very small resources, on a very thin squad. Invest now, right? Rather than do the traditional West Ham thing, which is let yourself get into a relegation struggle and then panic buy in January. So you're always kind of throwing money to fight fires. That's what West Ham chairman, you know, usually have to do. Why not do what we did in the mid-noughties when Alan Pardew went to the board at the time and said, listen, I've got this club against all expectations. It's our first season in the Premier League. I've got us in the top half of the table. Why not double down on that now? Why not invest in something that's already doing well? And that's how he got the board to buy Dean Ashton, which turned out to be a very successful signing, and we end up getting to the cup final. That's what I feel that David Moyes should be doing now, is going to David Sullivan and saying, let's not wait until we're in another crisis to buy players. Let's instead look at a team that's doing very well and roll the dice and think, God, how much? Let's not be content with mid-table. Let's try and take this a bit further. We only need one or two quality players and this team could turn into a very serious Premier League proposition, right?
Yeah, I agree. And the only shame of that is we're in a pandemic. We're in a pandemic and a huge uncertainty economically as well for West Ham right now. No money from gates. In fact, prior to the Palace game, Crystal Palace match, that is, I asked Moyes about his plans for the January transfer window and he said it's going to be tough. Pretty much no money at West Ham right now. They're looking at like loan deals, if anything. So I reckon it could be a case where we see outgoings before, you know, arrivals come in. And it's a great shame because, as you touched on, great start to the season. Great opportunity to build on that in the second half of the campaign, but just due to our lack of finances, I just don't feel like the board will back Moyes during this window. And it's also a big part in why he hasn't been offered a new deal. That's due to the lack of finances right now.
He sounds as if he's one of the cheapest managers out there, and you've got to have someone in charge, unless David Sullivan thinks he's going to start doing it, which wouldn't surprise me. You've got to pay someone. You might as well just extend David Moyes onto a longer contract, but maybe David Moyes wouldn't want to accept such low wages again. I don't know.
One thing I want to just tell, because covering West Ham, like every day a player's linked to a move to West Ham. Like every day I get DMs like, hey, are we signing this player? Are we signing that player? I'm like, first of all, it's West Ham. So every player under the sun will be linked to a move to the club. That's one thing. Every player. And another thing is, West Ham, often not, they tend to do their business late in the window. 5 days to go before deadline. That's when you see West Ham at their busiest. Look at the last January transfer window. Sign Bowen deadline day. Sign Suchek 2 days prior to deadline day. So you'll see West Ham do their business late on. You rarely see West Ham do their business early in the window.
Okay, let's talk about probably the most persistent link we've had over the last week or two has been a return for controversial Austrian Marco Arnautovic coming back from China. It's really divided opinion on social media, that one. On the one hand, God knows we need a striker with his talents to push this team onwards. On the other hand, he left under a cloud. He's always been a little bit of a tricky character to like. And people felt like he left in a really inappropriate way, forced an exit from a club who treated him very well. Me personally, I'm not that bothered about that kind of those personal issues. What do you think? Do you think it's realistic and would you welcome it?
No way should West Ham look to bring Arnautovic back to West Ham. No way, Sam. Absolutely.
What's
no
your
chance.
Reasoning for that? Is it financial? Is it to do with his personality or his quality as a player?
It's more to do with his personality. Right now, the morale at West Ham is so good. So on paper, don't get me wrong, on paper it looks like a good signing. We all know Arnautovic was you know, contributed the goals for West Ham, and to an extent that's what the club needs right now. But if you just think about the disruptions he would cause, I remember when I think it's Clay Rafferty who spoke to TalkSport about him like interrupting training sessions for the women's team and how to be disruptive around the training ground. And let's not forget his brother also being his mouthpiece. Let's say Arnautovic can't get in the team, his brother will leak stuff to the newspapers about, oh, he's unhappy at the club, it's not working out for him. And let's not get a mistake in here, Arnautovic will want a lot of money if he were to come back to West Ham.
He loves a pound. That's his thing.
You know what I mean? And let's say there could be a scenario where he's the highest paid player at the club. How is that justified when you got people like Declan Rice doing well, Suchek doing well? Obviously, Antonio got a new deal, but Antonio doing well. I just don't think you don't do it. You know what? Just from the reaction I've seen on Twitter, I think I'm right in saying he's more hated than Dimitri Payet and Arnautovic. Like, I can't find one person who's found something positive to say about Arnautovic. Everyone's like, forget this guy. He handed the transfer request. We don't want him back.
Me personally, that stuff, I've never been able to quite get as irate as I feel that, as if I'm expected to, as a West Ham fan, about the manner in which players leave a club. Because I tend to sometimes just look at it as a career is a career, and these people, you know, you're going to get legends like Mark Noble, who, you know, a West Ham through and through. They were born and raised West Ham fans and nothing would encourage them to leave. But, you know, when players leave and they don't handle it, you know, perhaps in an appropriate way, I just sort of think, you know what? I'm quite cynical. I want good players at the club, right? If Paul Ince had wanted to come back and suddenly announced that he was coming back to West Ham in his prime, you know, when he was playing for Inter Milan and captain in England, if suddenly, so, you know, someone had said, well, we're getting Ince back, and Ince was arguably the best midfielder in his position in the world, I'd have just thought, yeah, get him back, mate. I mean, you know, he's the best midfielder in the world. Probably ditto Frank Lampard, to be honest, because I just want West Ham to do well, and I don't get as wound up by personality traits or perceived slights as I feel that maybe I should, or maybe I did when I was younger. But my reasoning would be, like you say, I mean, why pay this guy who's not going to be better than he was in his first spell? He's just done a year and a half in a pretty pony league in China. I don't think he's pulled up any trees there. By all accounts, he's not really taken it that seriously. He's not going to come back a better player or even as good a player as he was in his first spell. And we're going to spend a huge amount of money on him, money that we don't have. And it's a huge gamble, you know, for someone who effectively we're only getting as backup for Antonio because we can't trust Antonio's hamstrings. So that would be my reasoning. I mean, you know, same with Piatt. Piatt's been linked with the return a few times. I bloody love Piatt. In fact, no matter what Piatt did to get himself out of the club, he was such an extraordinary player. I don't think anything could ever make me dislike Piatt because he just gave us so much joy for the short time he was there. But Piatt is just not the player he was then. So why bring him back? Don't bring these players back when they're a shadow of their original selves. You know, it's like, it's just, well, it's like when they brought Tom and Jerry back, but they allowed them to talk. It was rubbish, wasn't it? I mean, it's just stupid.
Yeah,
it was just a rubbish cover version. So,
I read Marco Arnautović's interview with a media outlet, and he was saying how he underestimated how tough it would be in a Chinese Super League and how he was staying up late, drinking fizzy drink, eating the wrong food.
Drinking fizzy drinks?
Yeah, drinking fizzy drinks. Can you imagine? Drinking Coca-Cola before a match.
Honestly, I read a book called Why We Eat Too Much by a famous nutritionist over Christmas because that's the kind of rock and roll Christmas I had. And you know what? Drinking fizzy drinks is as bad for your health as smoking cigarettes. I'm going to say it. So if he's going around drinking fizzy pop when he's being paid hundreds of thousands of pounds a week to be a professional athlete, no. No way. Don't touch him with a barge pole.
See, back in the day, right, in the 80s and 90s, players would be playing like drunk, having a brandy before a match. Now it's an out of it, turn up with a stitch because he's been drinking fizzy drink.
I'd rather them have a brandy than a fizzy pop, to be honest. Yeah. So, okay, so we don't want him to come back. But I tell you what, right, we need a striker. We have to get a striker. Haller is not improving. He's getting worse now. It's ridiculous. I'm not exaggerating when I say sometimes it's like playing with 10 men. Yeah. The rest of the lads work their balls off and they don't have an outlet because they don't have the confidence to feed the ball into him. Yeah. When we like, you know, Moyes' tactics are to set up for counterattacks. Moyes' tactics are to set up expecting to have the minority of possession. But when we win it, we need to play it up front, forward and break. You cannot break with Sebastian Haller in the team. Because first of all, it's 50-50 whether or not he's going to hold it up. He loses possession way too easily. Not because he's got bad technique either. It's because he just switches off. He switches off physically. He lets defenders get in front of him or knock him down. You know, he's not playing with fire in his belly. Antonio looks great, but we can't trust him to last the whole season. Look in the Championship. Get anyone in, you know, who you might be able to pick up for not much money is going to be better than Haller at this stage, in my opinion.
Nah, sure. It's true. You know, when it comes to Haller, right, it's a bit like having a partner who's good in bed, but that's it. We don't contribute to all shopping. We don't help out with cooking. we don't take the bins out. Like, they won't take the dog for a walk. Every once in a while, they'll be so spontaneous, they'll order Chinese, order Indian. But when you look at the pros and cons, you think, I'm not getting much value here.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, even if you compare it to sexual performance, yeah, he might score an overhead kick, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to say what the equivalent would be in the bedroom, right? But let's just say something really exciting and exotic, right? But only like once in a while.
Yeah,
it's not like he's scoring overhead kicks like, you know, a couple of times a month. So you're holding out through the year of them being lazy, uncommunicative, unromantic, Rashane, because I know you're a romantic man and you like to be bought flowers or surprised with bubble baths, right? You're waiting for that. None of it's coming the whole year. Nothing. No support whatsoever. And then once a year, your other half does something pretty racy, but is it worth it? Is it worth waiting all year for that one moment of ecstasy, mate?
It's not worth getting that one item from the body shop for Christmas. You need to do a bit more than that. So yeah, that's my take on Haller.
Rashane, just give me a percentage likelihood that we're going to get a striker in before the end of January.
I reckon it's about 60% in terms of getting a striker in.
60%, that's not bad.
It all depends on the right player becoming available. Obviously, I know he's not ready for first team like appearances, but you know, Moyes is he really rates the young player, Meepo Odebeko, 21 and 23s. He's 18, and he really wants to give him a chance in the first team. And obviously, if West Ham were to sign another striker, it will sort of limit his first team chances. So it's believed that he will play some part in a cup game against Stockport County, just to see how exciting. He does. And yeah, because the thing is, right, he was supposed to play, I believe, in the second round Carabao Cup tie against Charlton Athletic, but he suffered a hamstring injury prior to that. So that sort of like hampered his progress, and he's been out since the match against Southend United, where Moyes and Paul Nevin were in attendance, and he scored two goals in that game. So since then, he's been battling with a hamstring injury. So yeah, it's believed he'll play some part in the game on Monday, and then go from there. But obviously, we need someone for right now. He's for the future, but we need someone for right now. So yeah, around a 60% chance that West Ham will look to bring another striker in.
What kind of player is this lad? I know you get to see, you know, the under 23s and academy lads in action quite a lot. What kind of style of forward is he?
Well, he's very fast, capable of scoring all sorts of goals, tap-ins, long-range goals, volleys, you know, really, really good player. Sort of, I'd say sort of a more mobile version of Marlon Harewood, I would say. A more mobile version of Marlon Harewood, yeah, that's probably the best comparison I could think of, but yeah.
That's exactly the sort of player that we need. That's exactly, yeah. He fits the description, strong, physically strong. That's the, you know, this is what we need. And I've got to say, mate, I just think that Haller's performances haven't been given so many chances now, are that poor that I can't see how much worse chucking a youngster in at this stage would be.
Yeah. And let's not forget, when Moyes was the manager of Man United, he gave Adnan Januzaj a chance. And then I believe it was the game against Sunderland where he scored two goals, and everyone was like, "Yeah, Januzaj could play for England. He's really good. Let's get him a British passport." So I mean, I don't think the reaction would be that over the top for me, Paul. Should he do well? But hey, Moyes has shown he's happy to give young players a chance. So hopefully that'll be me, Paul, the Becco come Monday.
Yeah, great. Well, we look forward to it because it's a great situation to give a player a start in, and it's one of the exciting things about third round of the cup. If you're against the lower league club, although God knows we've had bad experiences against them in the past, it'd be great to chuck a player like him in.
But Sam, barring the FA Cup, right? So on Monday, which is obviously yesterday, Southampton beat Liverpool. So a quick look at the table: West Ham are in 10th, 3 points behind Tottenham, who are 4th, but 7 points behind Liverpool, who are 1st. So, this is my take, right? West Ham are in a title race. That is my take right now, guys. West Ham are in a title race. Only 7 points behind Liverpool. There is no reason why West Ham... And as you touched on earlier in the podcast, there were matches which we could have won. Could have beat Chelsea on another day. Could have picked up points in that 2-1 defeat against Liverpool. That's what? 4 points right there, potentially. That could have been 31 points, which would have been 2 points behind Liverpool. So... only 7 points behind them. West Ham are still in a title race. It's possible.
I think, hang on, you're laughing there, but you make a, you know, that is a logical case, because I think that we've been very unlucky in games, and I think that had we had Antonio, I mean, it's a big if, I can see a minimum of 7 points more we would have got, thinking through all the games we've played so far this season. Yeah, and you know, so you look at Arsenal, you look at Chelsea, you look at Liverpool. You know, we got a draw against Man City, but I felt we had the better of the game. We lost to United, but again, I thought that we totally dominated United for the first 45 minutes, and we should have been home and dry by half time. Now, you also, let's look at the next seven fixtures. Just bear in mind that Antonio came on against Everton, and to me, he looked very close to being back to full fitness. Now, you know, we're always going to worry about the hamstrings bearing up, but there was no news after the game about any problems. And there's a big rest now until the next Premier League fixture. I would assume Antonio wouldn't start against Stockport, and so he can get even more rest time in. Now, we've got a big long rest. We came through a very tough period and managed to maintain that position in 10th. Here are our next seven fixtures, right? Burnley at home, West Brom away, Palace away, Liverpool at home, Villa away, Fulham away, Sheffield United at home. I would say we'd win against Burnley at home, we'd win against West Brom at home. maybe a draw against Palace. I felt they were one of the teams who gave us the toughest match we've had so far this season. Liverpool at home, way Liverpool playing, the way we're playing, I fancy us getting a point there. Villa away is the only one I could envisage us losing. We're going to beat Fulham away, and we're going to beat Sheffield United at home. That's 14 points from the next seven games, mate. Are we in a title race? If Antonio stays fit and Masuaku comes back sooner rather than later, yeah, why not? It's a weird season.
It's a weird season. You say 14, I say 17. I think we can beat Villa. So I say 17 points.
Well, if we pick that up, we're certainly in the top four, depending on other results. But no team is managing to pull away. No team is managing to achieve that kind of consistency and become the sort of winning machine you see some seasons. You know, I had begun to think until the defeat against Southampton that Liverpool were just gearing up to do that. But, you know, and I also think we've had fantastic performances in our last three games against Liverpool. So it's, yeah, why not? Will we win the league? I don't know. Probably not. Are we in the title race? Yeah, I think we're in the mix, mate. There, I said it. I think we're in the mix.
Come on.
We're in the mix, aren't we?
All right. You mentioned previously, right, there's going to be a blip in form eventually. And just looking at the fixtures, I believe it will be towards the latter stages of February, early March, because around February you've got Tottenham, Man United, Leeds, Arsenal, Wolverhampton. That'll be tough. But if we're able to overcome the next seven games, there's a big thing in belief in football. If you have that little bit of belief that you can just go over the finishing line, that does a lot in terms of performances and morale. And if we're able to pick up a lot of points over the next seven games, there's no reason why West Ham can't, let's say, realistically challenge for a top four, or one better than that, challenge for Premier League title. Absolutely no reason. As you touched on, everyone's struggling to find a bit of consistency. West Ham on a title race, it's possible. It is possible. Mathematically, it is possible, Sam.
I'd like to say, no, let's stay calm. But I think we're halfway through the season now, and it's time to allow our imaginations to run wild. And so, yeah, I'm backing us. You've convinced me, mate. I'm backing us for the league title. Exciting times. The Stockport game's up next. Any other selection surprises that we can expect? I suppose they're not surprises if we can expect them. But do you think he will make many changes? Do you think it will be a game in which he does want to give some youngsters a go?
Yeah, youngsters and fringe players. I believe he'll look to give Nathan Holland a chance. The young player, you know, been performing well for the under-23s. Yeah. Jean-Marc Baptiste could feature as well, promising player. And give the likes of Yarmolenko another try. Mama Lanzini, probably Mark Noble will start. Players like that. Mix it between, you know, fringe players and young players. I feel like that'll be the lineup against Stockport.
Well, we'll look forward to that. We'll be back next week to reflect on that game. We didn't get around to talking about your Thomas Souček article, but if people want to read a fantastic piece that Rashane's written this week on The Athletic about Thomas Souček, the impact he's made on the club and just how he manages to get himself in so many goal scoring situations, then I can recommend it, as is all of the West Ham coverage that The Athletic give us and Rashane give us. So go and check that out. Rashane, any stuff you got coming up next that we can look forward to?
Yeah, a piece should be out tomorrow on why West Ham shouldn't sign Marko Arnautović. Another tactical breakdown on Highland, why it just won't work out for him. And a background on Meepo Debeco and why West Ham fans should be excited about his potential.
Fantastic stuff. We'll look forward to that. So get yourself involved at The Athletic if you're not already subscribing. There's a wonderful deal on there at the moment, so you might want to go and check that out at theathletic.com/West Ham Pod. Rashane, thanks as always. Thank all of you for listening. If you want to get in touch on Twitter, we'd love to hear your thoughts and questions about all things West Ham. I'm at Delaney Man. Rashane's at Rashane Sport. Until next time, thanks for listening, ladies and gents. And remember, there's only one Samassia Boo.